Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. Tonight's guest is a motivational speaker, a life coach, and a spiritual activist who in less than a decade has pretty much cornered the market as the go-to spiritual guru to the next generation. She's the author of several New York Times best-selling books, including May Cause Miracles, Spirit Junkie, The Universe Has Your Back, and Judgment Detox. And tonight, she joins us to talk about her latest book, Super Attractor, Methods for Manifesting a Life Beyond Your Wildest Dreams. Gabrielle Bernstein, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Gabrielle, as a child, you were highly intuitive. You believed in angels and fairies. Your mum was a devotee of Guru Mai. You grew up visiting ashrams and meditating. You read Wayne Dyer in high school. So spirituality has always been a part of your life. And yet, you also say that the first 25 years of your life, you spent in a bit of a negative mindset, always looking for something outside of yourself to make you happy. What happened during that period of your life to get you to the point where you battled with addictions to alcohol, drugs, food, and relationships?
Well, I actually didn't realize what it was that was the driving force behind that addictive behavior until later in my life. So in my early 20s, I was definitely looking to anesthetize some unsolved or unresolved discomfort. And I was using drugs and alcohol to numb out and to do that. I got sober when I was 25 because I had a strong spiritual foundation and I knew that there was more for me. And at that point, I became a spiritual teacher and I started writing books and leading talks. And I've been doing that now for the last 14 years. But it was only in 2016 when I realized what the driving force behind my addiction and panic and anxiety and behavior, you know, in some cases it turned into workaholism or, chronic anxiety. That was all based on a memory that I recalled when I was 36 years old in 2016. And it was a memory of a childhood trauma. And the recognition of that was my great understanding for all the ways that I had been living prior to that remembrance.
Do you think that the paradoxical behavior, you know, knowing that you had that spiritual foundation, knowing that what you were doing actually wasn't good for you and probably wasn't even what you really wanted to do, do you think that that was driven by that unconscious knowledge?
Yes, absolutely. I think that when you dissociate from a trauma and you have an unconscious belief system that's living there, you can feel very, very fight or flight, very traumatized, but not know why. And that we all look for a lot of different reasons to numb out and to anesthetize that pain because you don't want to feel it, but you don't know why it's even there. So it's a very confusing time for people.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had this kind of epiphany at the age of 25 and you understood that you didn't want to live like this anymore. But having the epiphany and then turning your life around doesn't happen overnight. And it said that the first step is the hardest. What was your first, your second, and your third steps? What did you actually do to start turning things around?
When I got sober or later in life?
When you got sober.
When I got sober, the first step was to really admit my powerlessness and see that I was definitely struggling and accept that and honor that. And then I allowed myself to be humble, to be guided, and to follow a group program, very profound guidance that we can.
Who at that time of your life was the most helpful to you in turning your life around?
Probably my best friend, Michaela. She is my closest friend. She's she's like a sister to me. I think just being in, having a friend that believed in me and was going to have fun with me but not drink, you know, that kind of friend, was very, very, very helpful to have as I stepped into being a sober woman at such a young age. You know, having a close friend was probably imperative.
At what point did you realize that you actually wanted to share your experience and share what you'd learned with other people?
Very quickly into my recovery. Probably within a few months of getting sober, I was talking about it very publicly and started to, within 6 months, probably started putting on talks and sharing my recovery and sharing my experience and giving people and sharing the methods and the spiritual lessons that I was learning, but in a different way, like in a more modern, unique, young way. I was, you know, 25, so it was coming out of me in a different lexicon.
And how did your friends, I mean, at that age, it's an interesting age, 25, how did they respond? You know, did they think you were evangelizing?
No. The friends that I made and the people that came to my talks, they believed in what I was saying because I believed in it.
Mm. In the very first chapter of your new book, Super Attractor, you tell a story about a coach who told you that she feels like a fraud because she has a lot of fear and she still obsesses about the small stuff, etc. And you responded to that by confessing that here you were writing your seventh spiritual book and you're still a head case. Mm-hmm. You are quite open about your failings and your, you know, the moments when you don't quite make it to that level that you would like to always be at. Is this something that, you know, you're naturally a sharer, or is it something that you do because you think by sharing, you know, your failings with others, it helps them cope better with their own?
Both. I mean, I'm naturally a sharer. It feels a lot more comfortable to me to be authentic, and I wouldn't be able to stand there and say, well, one day you'll get there, you know. I wouldn't be able to pretend that I was anything but the exact woman that I am in the moment. But at the same time, I think it also is extremely beneficial for a reader or an audience member to see that they are not alone. So I have been very open and vocal and verbal about the struggles that I've had so that people don't feel that shame, because I believe when you see somebody speaking openly about shameful topics, but when they stand in their recovery from that shame, it gives the viewer or the reader permission to release their shame too. I've been saying lately that I feel like I'm a shame shifter, and I really stand behind that.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think as Brené Brown has, you know, shown us so beautifully, vulnerability is really important, isn't it? If we can be vulnerable, it gives others permission too.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm. So you know, it's clear from the success of your books that after decades of being dismissed as New Age psychobabble or just plain old woo-woo, spirituality has definitely reached a tipping point and gone mainstream.
Yep.
Don't take this the wrong way, but the principles and the concepts and the ideas that you teach are not new. And you share this openly.
They're not new at all. No,
not at all. But what do you think, you know, there have been so many people trying to move who are very excited. You know, consciousness is rising on the planet. People are waking up. There are many new, young spiritual teachers in the arena. And I should think there's been a lot of people who have had their eye on the vacated crowns of Louise Hay and Wayne Dyer. What do you think it is about your work, your approach, that people resonate with so much?
I know that it's because I've been forthcoming, authentic, vulnerable, and I have only taught from the place that I am. So I was never teaching from a place of full recovery and then, you know, teaching. Each stage of my own personal growth and development has been the platform that I would teach from. So whenever I'm teaching, it's coming out where I am. I'm grounded in what I'm teaching. I'm living what I'm teaching, practicing what I'm teaching, and have a lot to stand behind. So I'm not trying to be anything I'm not.
Learning as you go and sharing it too.
That's right.
Yeah. So do you think part of the success was that you happened to be in the right place at the right time, just as the consciousness on the planet was rising and a new generation was ready for something deeper and more meaningful than old time religion? Or do you, looking back, see it as more purposeful than that? You know, that spiritual contract or something?
This has nothing to do about right place or right time. This is what my spirit came back in this lifetime to do. And every single thing that's happened in my life is exactly as it was meant to be, so that I could do the work that I do and be the person that I am. This had nothing to do with, oh, she just was there at the right time.
Yeah.
You know? And that wouldn't have worked anyway. You know, like, I was just like, hit the right moment. It wouldn't have been sustainable. I wouldn't still be talking to you now.
It's so refreshing to hear someone say, someone of your age and someone who's talking to the younger audience that you are, that, you know, this was purposeful. This is what I was meant to do. This is what I came back to do, because there are so many older people who have been in this arena for a long time who haven't been able to say those words openly.
Yeah, you know, I think that everyone that teaches, they teach from their own beliefs and their own faith. And my faith is that my spirit chose this, and that it's my commitment in this lifetime to rid shame, to really help people release shame, to help people, to help crack people open to a spiritual connection. And to be a guide in a way that people, that will touch people on a very heartfelt level, so that they can really feel inspired and moved to grow. And I don't have any doubt in my mind that that's what I came here to do.
Mm. Oprah Winfrey gave you the sobriquet of next generation thought leader. Is that how you see yourself?
Yes.
You do. You know, one of the things I like about you, I've watched quite a few videos of you, is that you don't, you know, you're not, you have humility, but you don't have false modesty, and you're also not arrogant. I'm sure you've heard this before. You say it like it is.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just ask you about some of the things that you talk about in Super Attractor. You talk about people beginning their journey and that there are five principles to follow. Can you tell us what those principles are?
When you're beginning your spiritual path?
Yes.
I'm not even remembering what you're talking about from Super Attractor. Can you believe that?
Well, they're probably things that you teach all the time, I imagine. I mean, the first one is about the universe always saying yes.
Yeah,
speak about that a little bit.
Yeah, the universe always delivers. And the universe is always a yes for what we desire or what we don't. So even if we're in, it's all, what we're attracting is what we're aligned with. So whenever we're in a belief system of lack or fear or uncertainty, we're going to attract that into our life. And when we're in a belief system of joy, inspiration, love, and magnetism, then we're going to magnetize the things that we do want. We're going to be a super attractor. We're all super attractors, but we just forgot. So we've been misusing that magnetic energy. We, you know, if when we get into an energy of forcefulness or controlling or manipulating, we lose sight of the powerful magnet that we are to attract what it is that we truly want. And this book is really not a book about getting things and attracting things, but it's a book about how to feel good. Because when we begin to align with feeling good, that's when we manifest what we want rather than the things that we don't want.
You know, the words energetic alignment seem to be on everyone's lips these days. I mean, I often say it myself. You can tell when somebody's aligned and you can tell when they're not. What does energetic alignment mean to you?
It means that you have done whatever it takes to get closer to consciousness, that you have made a commitment to feeling good. and that you feel good and then you look for more. In this book, I mention Abraham Hicks 26 times. Mm-hmm. This book is very influenced by Abraham. And so I love what Abraham says, which is that when you're feeling good, you reach for more. And that's how we get into a sustainable alignment, is by leaning towards what feels good and then reaching for more and reaching for more. And what may feel good in the moment may be that, you know, we're so in such despair that, you know, blaming someone could feel better, but that's fine. Reach for more of that because it's getting you out of despair. So there's different levels of reaching for feeling good. It doesn't mean that I'm just reaching and I'm all of a sudden, you know, perfectly joyful. It's reaching for the next best emotion, best feeling thought, and guiding yourself there.
There is, you offer a simple way to, oh, it's gone so quickly. We're already at the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I know. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Gabrielle Bernstein about her latest book, Super Attractor. We'll be back with more from Gabby after the break.
Future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Gabby Bernstein, before the break, we were talking about the five principles to help people begin their journey. And the first one was the universe always says yes. You offer in your book a way that people can check the energy behind their request. What is that?
So when we have a desire that's backed with the belief that, oh, when I get that, I'm going to be happy. Or, you know, when I get that, I'll feel good enough. Or I need that to feel good enough. That's a sure sign that your desire is not backed with spiritual alignment. When we set an intention and a desire that's backed with love and service and inspiration and joy, then we can be sure that it is backed with spiritual alignment. So it's about really connecting yourself with what is it that I'm feeling behind my desire. And if it's not backed with spirit, with joy, with love, with inspiration, then do what you got to do to reframe it, reprogram it, or maybe release it for a little while until you get cleaner in that area. Because if we're just searching and longing and pushing and controlling, we will be like a fish out of water flailing.
You know, ever since The Secret, and probably long before that, you know, people have been talking about asking the universe for what they want. It's almost become a cliche in a way. And
Perfect.
I can understand that people get very skeptical about it, or they kind of do it as a gimme, gimme, gimme kind of approach. But they don't really believe it. How would you encourage someone to get to that place where they can ask for what they want and believe that they can have it?
Well, I think that there's two things here. One thing is that I started to receive more and more of what I want once I stopped asking the universe to give me things and started asking the universe to show me what I needed to do and to show me what was meant for me. So I think that faith comes when you recognize that the secret to prayer is to forget what you think you need and to allow what is of the highest good to be revealed to you. When we pray for, you know, this or whatever is of the highest good, that's how we can really release it. Because sometimes our plans are not nearly as good as the plan that the universe or God has for us, right? And
right.
So we have to do our part to have the freedom to have a desire. And, you know, it's fine to have a great desire, but let it go and trust that it's this or something better.
Your second principle to help people get going is, and you just discussed this a little bit, it's good to feel good, but you also say that most of us resist feeling good. Why do you think that is?
We resist feeling good because we've become so accustomed to feeling bad. And I think that we, in many ways, choose fear and discomfort as a way of a false form of protection, a way of protecting ourselves from not getting what we want, from disappointment, from being vulnerable, from trusting and having faith in the universe. And so we don't give ourselves permission to really let go and feel good because we don't believe it's we're worthy of it. It's the biggest thing is that there's a feeling of unworthiness. And so when we begin a spiritual practice, we start to have a relationship beyond our physical sight, and we start to see the synchronicities and the support that's around us. And that is one big way to begin to establish a sense of worthiness, when you can see how supported you really are.
It's interesting that we default to negative. People always remember the negative experiences in life more than the positive ones. You know, they seem to put more stock into them and credit them for shaping, you know, the way they are. And isn't it sad that, you know, we default to feeling bad because we feel comfortable?
It is sad, and it's what this book is sort of trying to defy, right? This book was saying, no, you know, you think that you need that thing to be happy, but you actually need to be happy to have all those things in your life. And so this is a book on just, you know, really claiming and unapologetically claiming your desire to be happy and free. And trusting that the universe will get you there in weird ways. You know, I've been on such a devotional path of committing to feeling happy and free, and right now in my life I've never felt better than I do in this moment right now. I've never felt more free, more happy, more peaceful, at ease. But it was a really, you know, the universe had a big plan to get me there. You know, 5 months ago I was diagnosed with postpartum anxiety and depression, and I was suicidal. And so that rock bottom of mental illness was the catalyst for some of the greatest freedom I've ever experienced, and that's where I am now. So, you know, it's just interesting how we get there.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to bring it up later in the show because you've been quite public about your fertility struggle. It took you 3 years to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. You so wanted this baby, and you so, you know, understood, despite all the disappointment and the frustration, and I'm sure the sadness, you understood that the universe had its own timing. And then you get what you want, and you're hit with postpartum depression. That must have come as a big shock and a big disappointment. At a time like that, you know, when the body chemistry is off, there's all kinds of things going on, it is really hard to find feeling good. What, you know, I mean, when your tools don't work, how do you get out of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So here we go. So in the book, I say the secret to feeling good is to decide to stop feeling bad. And then, you know, that's all nice and good in like the regular scenario. But when you're in my situation where you're having a biochemical issue and you want to kill yourself, it's like you could say, well, how could I decide to stop feeling bad? You know, or if you're, you know, having, you know, a chronic illness or whatever it is, how could I decide to stop feeling bad? Well, it was my commitment to stop feeling bad that got me out. every day I would say, okay, well, I had another, you know, hour of sleep tonight rather than last night where I didn't sleep 1 minute, right? Or I would celebrate that I had friends that were supporting me. I would continue to pray for help and just say, you know, I know that help is on the way. I know that help is on the way. That is just a conscious commitment to deciding to stop feeling bad, just simply saying, I know that help is on the way. And so being in that commitment is what kept me connected to my faith and not giving up. And then when we have that connection to faith, we can trust that we're being guided. In my case, I was guided to my therapist just saying, your tools are not working, we have to go further. And that's where I sought psychiatric support. And, you know, there's something that we have to understand that we can't, it's when we surrender and we trust in God that we will be guided to what we need to heal. We can't be the director of our healing path. And the psychiatric support that I received allowed me to feel safe enough to do really deep healing, trauma work, recovery work. And that's what's been giving me the freedom that I've had right now. So, you know, I can see it was perfect. More importantly, I can see how perfect that postpartum experience was, because now I can speak extremely authentically and vulnerably about mental illness, and I will no longer be contributing to the stigma.
Yes, and let's face it, I mean, we need more people speaking openly about it. It is just such a huge, huge epidemic of mental illness.
Epidemic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's clear that humanity is going through a huge paradigm shift right now. We're watching all the old structures crumble around us. We're seeing that the emperors we were taught to worship, the politicians and presidents and world leaders and financial institutions and the pillars of society, have no clothes on. You know, organized religion's in decline. Politicians are arguing and fighting like children in a playground. Corruption and greed are rampant, and it's stoking everyone's fears. What advice would you offer to those who are perceiving nothing but darkness right now?
Oh, I would want them to read Super Attractor so that they could start to find, or any spiritual book, so that they could start to find light in the midst of that darkness. Because if we just get succumbed by the darkness, then we are contributing to the problem. And we have to do our part to find the light. And that light doesn't come from focusing on all the negativity all the time. I'm not in any way suggesting that you be apathetic to what's going on, but I'm saying that we have to find that joy. We have to find that inspiration, because when we start to dwell in that energy of joy and inspiration, that's when we get inspired ideas. That's when we do our part to show up. That's when we decide to run for office, or that's when we decide to donate that money. And so being in that energy is extremely important.
One of your principles is about putting out what you want to receive. You say that we clarify our desires through the power of intention, and being a super attractor isn't about trying to control every thought that passes through our mind or living in some utopia without challenges. It's about raising our vibration so we can co-create with the universe. How do you raise your vibration?
I raise my vibration every day through transcendental meditation, through baths. I take baths to raise my vibration, through exercise, through conscious contact with my higher power, through the time I spend with my son, cooking for my son, playing with my son. I raise my vibration through my commitment to others. Especially when I'm speaking, I feel most connected to God. That's a big way I raise my vibration. Saying nice things to people, making people feel good, raises my vibration. Lots of ways.
How has having your son changed you?
He has given me a deeper level of compassion and connection to others. Because, I don't know, something about becoming a mother and going through the dark times with the postpartum has given me this, not like an unhealthy attachment to people's pain, but a greater awareness of the pain. And, you know, before I would hold a very strong boundary because I couldn't get up and write these books or talk and take on everyone's pain. I wouldn't have survived, right? but I now feel more connected to them. I think it's possibly being a mother and also and the maternal energy, and also potentially that it's there because I went through so much, and I'm now on the other side of it, and I can really have a deep level of compassion for that kind of pain.
Children are wonderful for bringing us all the way back to what's really important, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I had my first grandchild, holding him. He was about 5 months, and standing at the window and just watching the way that he would look at the trees moving with great wonder. And the next day, we'd stand at the window and he would look at them again with exactly the same degree of wonder that he had the day before.
So amazing. So amazing.
Yeah. It's just incredible the way having children in our lives do bring us back to what is fundamentally real and what is important, and to appreciation.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I agree with you completely. Yes.
Yeah. Talk to me about, you talk about the universe is always guiding us to the highest good for all, and that living with positive expectations clears the path for solutions in all situations, even difficult ones. If you were faced with someone who was having a very challenging situation, I mean, you've talked about having trauma in your life. If you were confronted now with a child or an adolescent who was experiencing trauma and is not in a place to be able to see the gifts in that, because that tends to come with hindsight, what would you say to help them through this moment, this now moment of trauma?
I would honor their feelings and their experience and tell them that they are safe with me.
With you?
That they're safe with me, because when you're in that kind of experience, you feel shamed and unsafe. And so honoring that experience, if ever anyone comes to you, whoever's listening, and admits the trauma, never ever deny it. Don't question them, because that's where the shame comes, right?
So, absolutely. Yeah, make them wrong. Yeah. You cannot
make
somebody wrong.
And then do whatever you can to help them feel safe.
Mm.
Well, don't contribute to the shame.
I'm curious to know what inspired you to write this particular book at this time.
I wanted to feel good. I wrote this book while I was pregnant. I just wanted to focus on feeling good and having fun. I had a really fun time being pregnant. And I just wanted to feel good, and so I wrote this book as a real good reminder of my capacity to live as a super attractor.
Is that what, you know, the motivation for all of your books? At that moment in time, you are wanting something, and the book that you're writing gives that
to
you?
That's correct, yes. I'm writing what I need. I used to think I wrote my books for my audience. I wrote my books for myself.
Yeah, well, I think we do. Yeah, it's all about us, isn't it? What inspired you to write the first one then?
Oh, I wanted to really expand the spiritual lexicon for the next generation of seekers. And I wanted to speak openly about what I believed was true. And that's why I wrote my first book.
And when you wrote it, did you write it with the intention of getting it published, or was it something you just wanted to do for yourself?
No, I was working to get it published. That's right. I actually didn't write it until I sold it. I wrote a proposal, and it took me a little while, 2 years or so, to sell it, and then I sold the book, and then I wrote it.
Because I'm sure that when people read your books, I mean, I know that you're wildly popular and people flock to your events, and your work is very helpful to them. But I'm sure that some of them walk away going, yeah, but, you know, I can see how Gabby can manifest all of this, but I'm not quite sure that I can. That they, you know, see you as somebody perhaps a little bit above them.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that when I'm as open as I am about what I have gone through, they are reminded over and over again that they are no different than me and they can recognize themselves in me. Mm. If they felt that they were less than me in a severe way, it wouldn't work. They couldn't, they wouldn't, I wouldn't be their teacher.
They wouldn't resonate with you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with spiritual activist, teacher, and New York Times bestselling author, Gabrielle Bernstein, about her life, her work, and her latest book, Super Attractor, Methods for Manifesting a Life Beyond Your Wildest Dreams. We'll be back with more from Gabby Bernstein after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Gabby Bernstein, in Super Attractor, you give a wealth of tools, tips, exercises, information, etc. Two in particular, I'd like for you to give us a little brief rundown on Think to Feel It and Choose Again. These two methods, I think, are incredibly powerful and valuable. So could you just run us through them?
Yeah, I'll teach you the Choose Again method first because I think it really lends itself to moving into the Think It to Feel It. So Choose Again method is about noticing consciously throughout the day the fearful thoughts that we have on the loop, the stories that we reclaim, repurpose, and speak over and over again to ourselves. And to notice that thought is the first step. And notice how that thought's making you feel. You become conscious, aware, and you know, connected to what's going on. Then the second step is to forgive yourself for having the thought. Because when you forgive yourself for having the thought, you're dissolving the thought, you're taking away its power, and you're disassociating yourself from that thought. So you're no longer thinking, that is who I am, but instead you're recognizing that that's just a story that you've had on repeat. And then the third step is to choose again. And this is about reaching for the next best feeling thought. And the choose again part is very, very Abraham Hicks. It's looking for that next best feeling thought and reaching for it and then going for the next one. But making sure that whatever that next best feeling thought is a thought that you believe in. You have to make sure that you believe in it. And then there is the think it to feel it. When we start to get ourselves into the thought system that is more positive and it's a thought system that we do believe in, we can meditate on that thought. We can repeat that thought as an affirmation. We can allow that thought to take over our energy field and get us into an energy that feels connected to it. And that feeling is what attracts. You know, often people think that they put the vision boards or say the affirmations and that's enough, but it's really about feeling a shift, feeling the feeling of that energy. And when we feel that energy, everything begins to speed up in our life and we become super attractive.
There are so many people waking up right now, and a lot of them are turning to your work and discovering who they are through what you're sharing with them. What are you learning from these young people? You know, I think about certainly my generation is being accused of having ruined the world for the next generation, etc., and the one after that. And I think by and large, we are out of touch with what the next generation are really looking for. What do you think that they want? What do you think that we can do to support them in getting what they want?
I think that this newer generation wants to have an impact and wants to make an impact. I think the way we can support them is to not put down their ideas, to honor their commitment, encourage them to work hard for sure, but teach them spiritually aligned action, which is what I teach in my book. That when we take an action from a place of connection, inspiration, spiritual connection, faith, love, service, then that action is taken from a place of spiritual alignment, and that will have a much bigger impact rather than ego alignment, which would probably fail. So I think, you know, teaching them how to make an impact and giving them the tools and the methods.
You know, we look at what's happening in the world, as a I said earlier, you know, everything seems to be crumbling. We seem to be heading back towards dictatorship, authoritarianism, etc. And at the same time, we are seeing these incredible young people who are very action oriented. And, you know, they know what they want. They know the kind of world they want to live in. They know what they don't want. And, you know, they're unashamed about rejecting some of the things that their parents and their grandparents stood for. When you look at those two sides of things that are going on, how hopeful are you that we are going to get beyond all of this chaos that is happening right now, and that your son will have a much brighter future?
I am hopeful because of the spiritual awakening that's happening, that this is that spirituality is a trend, which is a good sign. You know, it's a better sign than war being a trend, you know. So that new global commitment to an elevated consciousness, if it's followed and stays committed, will make a big impact on the energy of the world around us. If you ask, you know, my friend Deepak Chopra, he'd be like, the world is ending. You know, I was with him 2 weeks ago, and he was literally just, you know, talking about how crazy things are and how mad it is. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong. But I can't wake up every day without having a sense of faith that this is going to get better.
Well, I think, you know, from where Deepak sits, he knows a different world. He grew up in a different world, a much quieter, calmer, you know, less technology ruled world. The young of today don't know that world. Thank goodness in some ways, because they don't know, you know, they can't fall into the pit that Deepak might be inclined to fall into, because they don't have anything to compare it with. How do you see your role moving forward? I mean, do you see yourself, you know, just doing more of what you're doing, bigger audiences, or do you have some other idea for where you want to take your work in the future?
I just want to keep doing more of what I'm doing, and I don't have any goals. I just want to keep showing up, and like I said, I want to let God show me what to do. And I have no goals. My intention is to serve, and I want to make as big an impact as I can in the service of others. That's really it. I really mean that. I don't want to sound like I'm saying all the right things. I really mean that.
Well, you know, I have to confess that before watching some videos of you, I did wonder. But what comes across is your authenticity. We can feel it in you. You know, as I said earlier, the alignment, you know, we know when it's there and we know when it's not. And no, you don't come across as unauthentic in any shape or form. So thank you for that, because that is exactly what needs to be modelled. You know, there's too much inauthenticity in the world as it is, and we are seeing that. Thank goodness, you know, in this chaotic time that we're in, we are seeing the hypocrisy. We are face to face with it all, and we have a choice to choose differently for ourselves in the future.
That's right.
I want to move on before. We've only got a, you know, a, probably about another 7 minutes. But before we get to the end, I want to talk about some of the things that you offer to people. I mean, you're one person. You can write books. You can record meditations. You know, you can record your books. You can present events. But you cannot be everywhere at once. And one of the things that you are doing so that people can have as much of you as they want is your Miracle Membership. Tell us about that.
The Miracle Membership is awesome. It's a way for me to be someone's life coach in their inbox, right? So I can't, obviously, I haven't coached individually in 13 years. So I can't. But it's a way for me to give the lessons and the methods that I'm living by in someone's community. So it's a community for people who are looking to have guidance and stay committed to their spiritual path. And every month they get a new podcast kind of talk with me. They get a meditation, brand new meditation. They get an archived greatest hit, so like a 40-minute talk that I've given in the past. And they get a lot of trainings and support and community and a lot of additional bonuses and guidance throughout. So it is my way of giving a larger community the resources that I'd like to be able to give somebody on an individual level. And this way I can meet people in the comfort of their own home.
Many businesses, people start, you know, their businesses because they have a great idea or they're passionate about something. And when a business is successful, and your business is very successful, it can get to a point where the business is doing you more than you're doing it, in a way. And the fun goes out of it because you're having to run a business and the business is big and it takes up more time and attention. How do you cope in your business with not allowing that to happen to you?
I did let that happen to me for many years, but today I do not. That's not even close to my reality today. Today I have let go of the rope, and I've hired a lot of people. My husband is the CEO of my business, so he runs our business with me, but you know, he probably does a lot more than I do today for the business than I ever did. 2 years ago, I stood in front of my fireplace and I was like, I am done. All I want to do is speak and write. And I'm happy to tell you that is where I'm at right now. I'm weighing in, but I have a team that's running it for as a team. We're all in the same devotion of the same commitment. My team believes in this work just as much as I do. They feel that they're contributing to the world as much as I am, and that they're in the pursuit of something great. And I'm very blessed. But, you know, that wouldn't have happened. Plenty of people can have all the resources to hire a team, but they still don't let go. You have to let go. Yeah. So I'm proud, very proud, but I've let go.
How do you find it? I mean, working, living, and loving with your husband, does it hinder or help your relationship?
Helps. When we started working together 6 years ago, it was the best thing we ever did. The best thing we ever did. Yeah.
It's really?
Been very, very awesome. Yeah, it gave us a greater sense of purpose and commitment to the world together, and great connection. Also, you know, what we do and what we bring to our business is so completely different than we couldn't do it without each other, you know? So we both have an incredible respect for one another.
Do you think that it's more successful for you two than it is for some other couples who are in business together because of the nature of the business that you're in, that you are constantly being reminded of the principles that you're teaching?
I've seen people in my field work with their partners, and it's not good. So, you know, I think it's about who we are and that we practice what we preach.
Mm. What is, of all the things that you do, what is the one thing that gives you the most pleasure?
The thing that gives me the most pleasure is what I'm about to go do now, which is give my son a bath with my husband and put him to bed. That's my next move after this.
Yeah. Beautiful. Before we bring the show to a close, and we have about another 3 or 4 minutes, I would like you to take us through one of the meditations in your book, Peace is in Your Pulse.
This is a really great one. This is a meditation that is great for beginners. You can just find your pulse right now. And we would use a mantra. It's a mantra-based meditation. So you could lose the pulse part at some point if you wanted to just meditate with the mantra. But as you find the beats of your pulse, you would repeat the mantra, Sat Nam, Sat Nam. And Sat Nam means truth identified. Truth is my name. And you could keep repeating Sat Nam to the beat of your pulse. When your net line starts to detour onto something else, you just return to Sat Nam. You return to Sat Nam. And if you decide that the pulse is not for you, just repeat the mantra, Sat Nam, and let that be your single point of focus and continue to come back to it as a guide and a way of letting go of your thoughts and calming your nervous system.
Hmm. Thank you for that. If you could only offer people one piece of advice for living their best life, what would it be?
Honor your feelings.
Honor your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's an interesting one, because I'm not sure if people actually know how to do that.
They don't.
There are so many pressures on us.
Yeah. Not a common theme for people. I would say that the work to honor your feelings comes when you become brave enough to feel, and when you give yourself permission to be with what's coming up for you. Because what we do is we just push it down. I'm not going to say I don't do that, but many people push it down.
Mm.
And that numbing out is like a pressure cooker, because eventually it'll come through.
And that's what society trains us to do, you know,
right.
Because other people can't deal with, you know, emotion or whatever it may be. So we are encouraged to stuff it all down and keep it secret.
That's exactly right. That's right.
Mm. Of all the books you've written, which is your favorite?
There's a tie between The Universe Has Your Back and Super Attractor.
Mm. Because?
I think they're the books that will have the greatest impact. They were the most joyful to write. And
for you.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the next one?
After that, I would say, The Universe Has Your Back and Super Attractor are a tie. And then after that, I would say Spirit Junkie, because it's helped many, many people get sober. And I'm very proud of that.
Mm. But when I'm glad you said that, but when I said the next one, what I actually meant is, what is your next book?
What's my next book?
Yeah.
I'm working on a book with Audible. That's an Audible original.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I would even call it a book. It's like a story, exercises, music experience with Audible. The working title is A Way Through Every Block. And it's taking the 5 sutras for the Aquarian age. Yogi Bhajan, the Kundalini teacher, left us with these 5 sutras. And I'm interpreting those 5 sutras for the modern seeker. And, it's beautiful.
We should look forward to that. Gabrielle Bernstein, go and enjoy your son. And
thank
you for being
friend.
With us today.
Beautiful interview. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Super Attractor, Methods for Manifesting a Life Beyond Your Wildest Dreams, is published by Hay House. For more information about Gabby Bernstein's books, work, events, and programs, visit GabbyBernstein.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.